Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host, and we're climbing back into magic. The magic of you and all of us to learn how to use it better, to be in the magic of life in a way that is very helpful. I don't know how we can live without it. And to help us learn how to live with it is a man who has written a couple of incredible books, and he has learned from his own experience how much he needs the magic in his life and has written beautifully about it. His latest book is The Last Shaman, and I totally love it. It is one of the great books that I've read, and I'm so happy to be talking to William Whitecloud. William.
Hello, Peter.
Thanks so much. I'm thrilled to be able to talk with you. You're an amazing author. You write such beautiful stories.
Oh, thank you. And it's a real privilege to be on your show, I must say.
Well, thank you. I loved every page of the book. I learned a lot from it. I am an intuitive myself, and I understand some of the keys that you speak about, and I love the way you present it. It makes it so real to people, and it's exciting to, this is an action-packed book.
Thanks. No, it's a great story. I mean, I'm not just blowing my own trumpet. I love the story myself because, you know, I discovered that story in Africa. My brother introduced me to a rock art expert, this guy who studies, you know, indigenous rock paintings going back 27,000 years. And it's a fascinating subject. And he took me out into the field. And it was just an amazing experience because he uses a divining rod to actually find cave paintings because, you know, they're tucked away in canyons and that. And we were finding, just out in the field with him using these divining rods, discovering 6,000-year-old paintings that were in just amazing conditions. And, you know, some of the paintings that were painted with sticks and ochre were photographic in quality. And the story behind them was just amazing because they all reflect stories of journeys to the other world. And I was just, you know, so blown away just by being in the field with this guy, Victor, and learning about these paintings. And it just gave me this whole idea of you know, what I wanted to teach people about intuition and being guided through life by a sort of a higher power, and, you know, being able to be guided by your higher power through life. And it just gave me this whole premise for a story, you know, which I then just followed, and just the story just came out. Using the principles I use for creativity and intuition, I use those principles because I'm not actually a writer by trade or profession or anything. It's just I do have principles that I want to convey, and then I just use those principles, and the writer comes out and writes the story that you read.
Yes, and it comes from also from this background in Africa. You grew up in Swaziland, and you understand the culture and some of the gifts that they have to offer.
I do. I mean, one of the major effects of my life on my life has been growing up in Africa, and growing up at the time that I did, when I grew up in Swaziland, it was a very, particularly the area I grew up in, it was a very wild place. I mean, when my father moved there to develop the area that we lived in, the road, the track he was driving on actually ran out 100 miles before he got there, to give you an idea of how wild it was.
Amazing.
And the people that I grew up among were very steeped in this supernatural worldview. And, not, you know, their whole self-conscious reality almost to them was almost an illusion. And reality, self-conscious rational reality, was just something to be seen through to the supernatural spiritual dimension of life. And although that was stamped out of me in a series of boarding schools that I went to and then entering into the commercial world, it did come back to serve me later in my life, where now what I'm doing and what I'm helping people is to see through their rational sort of linear way of seeing things to the deeper levels of what's really there and what's truly driving them and or us, and, you know, what we can shift from the sort of lower levels of egoic consciousness that we can shift from to following and acting on higher levels of consciousness and acting in the highest good of ourselves and the world and community that and an environment, in fact, that we're a part of.
Well, the story that you write really guides us through that. Because the man who is the hero of the story is, I would relate him to you, and he's somebody who also grew up in Africa, and yet he didn't learn the ways until he needed to.
Exactly. Yeah. And it is very much the typical colonial experience. If you're a European African, you grow up totally divorced from the African, way of life. The whole thing about being a colonial in Africa is to not go native. It's right. they used to say that the definition of a gentleman is someone who uses the butter knife even when they're on their own, you know. So the whole thing is absolutely not to go native and not to subscribe to any of their views and ways at all. And so this is the case of the character here who grew up there but actually was divorced from what was really going on and then delves into the culture through circumstances, forced circumstances actually, because he's a reluctant hero, and then discovers what this culture is all about and what it has to offer and what it has to offer in terms of exactly what we're talking about, having a deeper appreciation of life, greater awareness, and being able to, as I say, be guided and follow higher guidance to, you know, live our lives out of.
And yet this is an example book because he is put into dire circumstances and also meets a teacher, a shaman who understands his naivete and helps him learn gifts of shamanism, of intuition, of letting go, and the truths behind it, because this teacher of his has to keep hammering in these truths throughout the book, and you see how he evolves into them and becomes them from his experiences, because he's brought into experiences that are, in a sense, are otherworldly to what he understood could happen, how our minds can work and how we can create life from a different vantage point.
Well, you certainly have read the book, Peter, I can tell.
Sure.
And it's true. The book actually is, I'm really proud of it, I must say, because to read inspirational books, often they lack the meat and the actual tools that will really empower you. And then if you read textbooks on personal and spiritual development, they can be so dry and boring.
Yes.
And so to combine it, where these tools can be conveyed, these lessons can be conveyed through a compelling story is quite a feat. And I bow down to my higher power that guided me and gave me the book through me, channeled it through me. But it is really a textbook in a sense that teaches you systematically how to develop your intuition and awareness and be, submit to the desires of your soul really and be guided to a soul, a truly soul-inspired, soul-genius life. And I love the character that came out that teaches him that, because there are many teachers in the book, but the principal teacher, his chief mentor, is someone who has studied in the West, who actually has a doctorate in philosophy, and yet lives out in the jungles as a tribesman. So he understands both worlds, and he's able to shift the character Mark from his old rational colonial kind of perspective through to this supernatural worldview that through which he can learn, because at the end of the day, it's just a metaphor for learning and gaining the ability to live your life by magic and the definition I use by magic is the academic definition, that many scholars use, which is simply to live your life guided by intuition, aided by intellect. And this is the power that the character has at, by the end of the book so strongly. And anyone can have, actually, by reading the book. I mean, it's all there, all the principles, premises, and abilities that one needs to understand and master are there. And if one acquires them, which one does by reading a story, the great thing about conveying lessons through stories is that as you read the story, you actually, it's a form of practice. You know, scientifically, it has been discovered that when people learn through story, the benefit of the story is that you actually, your mind doesn't differentiate between the character and yourself. You're actually going through it yourself. And in fact, so many people now who are reading the book, because now it's out, are reporting that they felt very different to any other book, that where you read it and you follow the travails of the character, whereas with this one, people really say that they felt like it was their own journey. They found themselves on their own journey. And that is the power of storytelling.
And there's so many truths in here that I love hearing in the story. I've been teaching intuition for many, many, many years. And I'm a cerebral guy, and a lot of it is information and practice, too. And yet I know that, and you've inspired me in the book to really maybe teach more in shamanistic ways, because those are much more experiential.
Well, yeah, at the end of the day, Peter, the problem is with anyone in personal development and spiritual development, the big trap is that we try and learn formulas and information and knowledge and you know that we don't even appreciate it, because like the fish who doesn't know the water that it's swimming in, we don't appreciate how steeped in our rational linear mental framework we are as we even try to learn and develop a model for living outside of that. We still keep ourselves entrenched in that, and to actually, you know, live our lives intuitively, to have a true creative model for living, and an intuitive model and a spiritual model, I would say they all mean the same to me. You really have to get out of that and, you know, step out of the you know, doesn't matter all the frameworks and the formulas and the knowledge that we have, at the end of the day count for nothing when it comes to living it, because to live it we must give away our concepts, we must give away our what we know from before, and let go of control, let go of our need to know, and in fact go into a space of not knowing, and from that space, this is the territory that the fear is that there's going to be nothing there, that we're going to enter into a blank void. But the truth is, the void is fecund with wisdom, with information, with inspiration, with possibilities, making connections between things that we don't normally make connections between. It's a very inspired world, but it's a world that is born of innocence, as the word implies, in no sense, outside of our thoughts and feelings. As I say, this is the territory of our genius.
And I like the way you bring it into the story through talking about the innocence of the child, of the newborn, actually.
Yeah, I mean, you know, innocence sounds like a very vulnerable and in some ways naive principle, but actually innocence is a very powerful principle. If one studies mythology, you'll see that actually innocence is the most greatly admired principle of all. Christ at the end of the day said, only as a child can you enter the kingdom of heaven. And I'm sure that what he's talking about is that what a child lacks is that rational, linear, controlling framework. And so Christ saying, you know, if we really want to enter into this, you know, he's talking, using heaven as a metaphor, I'm sure, if we want to enter into this world of, soul-inspired genius, then, you know, we have to let go of that experientially born orientation. if you read also King Arthur, the original person who wrote the King Arthur legend was Robert Mallory, and if you read his book, the most powerful knight in the land was a knight called Galahad, and he compelled the search for the Holy Grail. When he came into the Knights of the Round Table, all the other knights beheld his innocence, and then they wanted what he wanted, and off they went in search of it. And so actually, innocence is although it seems like a really naive principle, it's actually the most powerful spiritual principle there is, to the ability to let go of what we know, soften our focus, and give up our controlling coping tendencies in life, and actually be more receptive. And when we do, a whole new way of life opens up to us, and new insights and awarenesses that guide us more powerfully than our rational faculties can, which just rely on the past, which just rely on our limited belief for direction.
Well, the belief that we have, our ego, controls so much out of survival. And so as we seemingly enter into innocence, it's not so simple, because the ego is going to challenge that.
No, and you need, and that's why I think my book served this topic very well, because you need structures to hold yourself in innocence, because as you say, as soon as you go into an intuitive mode, and why everyone just isn't living intuitively anyway, is just simply because we do have limiting beliefs that when we go into a non-survival mode, then the issues of survival, what we believe makes us unviable, very quickly impresses itself on us, lets us know all about it through intense thoughts and feelings, you know,
yeah.
So which cause us to scurry back to our old orientation.
Right.
So you need some will, you know, you need some understanding of the journey that's transferring you from a rational to an intuitive orientation.
Well, but that's why the teacher in this book is important to the hero, because he sees will faltering many times, and he needs to reassert himself to teach the truth.
Yeah, because you can't just leap from one orientation to another. As I say, we'd all be living in innocence, and we'd all be living intuitively if we didn't have this rational framework. This is the system of beliefs which have the benefit of communicating to us through thoughts and feelings, and strong, intense thoughts and feelings that herd us back to our old paradigm, that as soon as we start leaving that James Masterson, the famous psychiatrist, he called it abandonment depression, and it's not depression as we understand the term typically. It's just any kind of intense emotion, negative emotion that brings us back to our old way of seeing things, because when our ego sees us straying outside of what we believe keeps us safe, it's going to complain very loudly. And through the book, we see that although the character Mark Vail learns powerful lessons, you go, well, you shouldn't need any further proof than that. He still falters, and he still, you know, his ego still impresses on him, and that's why, you know, it's great that he's got this very powerful mentor that can always bring him back and teach him the next level to go to in this orientation. And that's the thing also that I will say, no matter how great a book you can read on the subject, and I do believe my book, you know, it gives a powerful insight and is powerfully instructional on this whole subject and process. At the end of the day, you'll never do it alone. I mean, I've been in this orientation now for over 20 years, and I don't do it alone. I've had my mentors, and I also have my community of like-minded souls who also support me in keeping me on track and showing me whenever I'm, in a perception that to me looks real but is actually an illusion. So there's no lone wolves on this track is what I'm saying.
Right, and since I've been teaching people, I've been a practicing intuitive for almost 20 years now, and it's so different between being an intuitive for somebody else and an intuitive for yourself.
Oh, yes, it is. It really is. I mean, the mind's a very tricky thing and can convince you of a lot of things. And, you know, the reality that impresses on us is just that to us. It just seems so real. And we have all kinds of competing agendas that sometimes we can get confused. I mean, the whole, you see, to me, the definition of intuition is information that we just, you know, is our highest truth for us to know without any agenda. It's just what we truly need to know. But there's a way in which we're so often trying to work things out for ourselves, and we do have our own agendas, that rather than just being open and just receiving whatever it is that's true for us to know, there's a part of us that tries to decide what is true for us to know, if you see what I
right.
mean.
And you talk about that in the book, is that you really have to get to know yourself, know your assumptions, know your idiosyncrasies, understand how your ego wants to play the game.
That's a really good point. I mean, as it says in the book, you know, there's no spiritual creative tradition throughout history that hasn't had its version of the axiom, know thyself. And you just do. You really do have to know yourself. You have to be able to separate your ego from your soul, as it were. You've got to know what the different drives in you and what they are, where they come from, what they look like, what they feel like, so that at any time during the day, you are able to know what you're acting in favor of.
Right. and sometimes we're our own worst enemies, and it's good to see that at play, and then we can laugh at ourselves and even discount that and go to a higher level.
And life is a learning orientation. The thing that a lot of people are looking for is the sort of perfect knowledge and the perfect information and the perfect state of mind before they start living. But actually, we're never going to arrive at that, and so therefore we'll never really begin and never start off on our journey. But if we appreciate that it is a learning orientation, this very thing that I'm saying now has helped thousands of people I've worked
sure.
with.
That
freedom to go, it's a learning orientation. I'll learn as I go along.
Right.
You know,
surrender.
Compels people on the journey and allows them to take the journey and actually powerfully grow and learn, because it's about growth. It's not like you start at zero in one moment and then you're at 100 at the next moment. That's why we call it growing, because you actually grow, and growth takes time.
It never stops.
Never stops. But it's part of the beauty of the journey is that. But at least you are growing, and there's joy and inspiration in your life as you grow, but there's always more to learn.
And there's so many tools to it, and so that's one of the gifts of your book is it offers so many opportunities to know the process, to understand how to be the child, how to be innocent, how to watch yourself, there are processes, there's tools in the book, like circles, for instance, or even bones.
Even bones. No, there's, you know, all the techniques, the very powerful techniques imparted in the book, which I, anyway, if you come and train with me, you'll learn those same techniques, and they're very powerful. They help, you know, they really help. And in terms of what we're talking about here is as we go through life and we face challenges and circumstances, etc., we do need to establish where the power is in our consciousness, what we're giving energy to, because what we give energy to is what gets created. And I mean, I haven't got time for them in this interview, but there's some fabulous exercises for very quickly determining what's going on in your consciousness and separating the wheat from the chaff, as it were, separating what your egoic assumptions are from what your soul desire and inspiration and direction is.
Right, and sometimes the people around us can inform us very quickly.
they can, and sometimes, though, they can collude as well in our view, you know. And so it's really great to have these skills that you can very quickly, almost instantly, just know where you're at, where you're coming from, and refocus. And put the power in where you want the power to be, to have the energy be in the part of your consciousness that you want it to be, so that what transpires in your life is going to look how you'd love it to look.
Very promising. It's so interesting how we learn to watch our minds and to use our minds better. And so this is the opportunity to do that and get out of her own way.
It is, as you say, it's a good way of putting it, is observing our own minds, noticing what's going on. And you know, it's a skill that it might sound like complicated and you need a psychology degree or something to establish it, but you know, anybody can do it. It's within anybody's grasp and ability to just simply ask yourself what's going on, and you know, you don't need an education, you don't need a degree. It's very easy to deconstruct what's happening for you in your own mind and arrive at powerful conclusions that can you know, take you in a powerful direction and compel powerful actions from yourself.
Right. It's more about I sometimes would call it talking with your heart instead of your head.
Well, you know, it's also the ability to discern your heart talk from your head talk.
Exactly.
Really.
Well, that's what I mean. And that's,
yeah.
And the head talk is often the distortion, and the heart talk is often the truth. And yet we have to learn to hear it better.
Yeah, you know, because the thing is, Peter, as you'll appreciate, is that, I mean, there's no other way of putting it. I wish I could put this in a softer way. But the truth of the matter, the fact of the matter is, every single one of us is lying to ourselves every day. We're telling through thoughts and feelings, we're getting information that is not true. Assumptions about possibility or impossibility, or what's going on, or impressions of people around us, perceptions, misperceptions. A lot of what's occurring to you every day actually is not true, has nothing to do with reality. And
That is so perfect, and we only have a couple of minutes left, and I'm, you know, it's so important for us just to become aware of our of this external world that we have to stop believing so hard.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is that We people often ask me, what do you do to help people with their negative beliefs? I help them to see through them, and it's so easy to see through. People, until you question what you're telling yourself, runs you, and it's just, you know, I often take people through a simple exercise. Just, what are you telling yourself? What do you believe about yourself? And then I ask them, do you really believe that you're that crummy, that you're that unworthy, that you're that powerless, that you're that incapable, that you're that scared or whatever it is? And no one's ever said yes. Everyone goes, no, that's rubbish.
Good. You know, what we wanted to know is actually, we want to continue this by having people be able to buy your book, The Last Shaman. And your name is William White Cloud. And people can reach you how?
Well, through my website would be the best method, okay. www.williamwhitecloud.com. And there's more information. In fact, there are free chapters on my books, and more information about me, the work I do, the events that are coming up, and also a lot of free resources that are available to support people on this journey, on this super conscious journey.
You're doing a wonderful job. I'm so happy to be talking with you. And I'm very excited about the book, The Last Shaman, and everything else that you're doing. So thank you very much for being a guest on Energy Stew.
Thank you, Peter, and thrilled to meet a like-minded soul such as yourself.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate that a lot. And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. And I can be reached at Peter at Heart River, HEART River.org, or 212-222-7748. I'd love to hear from you. So much going on, classes and all that is being offered through my website. And all the best in your journey to wonder and awe. And thank you so much for listening.